Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here again to really get into some fascinating analysis and pull out the big ideas for you.
Yeah, and today we're looking at something pretty intense. We're navigating some choppy waters, you could say.
That's a good way to put it. We're exploring a really critical analysis, looking at the information crisis, democracy. Mm. It's based on the style of Chris Hayes. We're calling this hypothetical deep dive the Siren's Call: Attention, Algorithms, and Democracy.
Mm-hmm. And that title, The Siren's Call, it really captures the core idea, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. The central point here is that, well, we're all kind of like sailors adrift on this digital ocean. And the constant lure from our screens, that endless feed, it's not just noise. The argument is it's actively pulling our society toward real danger, democratic decay.
It's a pretty stark warning. So our mission today, really, is to unpack this huge question. How exactly has our information environment been, well, engineered, you know?
Yeah.
Engineered to tap into our deepest psychological spots, all for profit.
Right, because the claim isn't just about, like, occasional fake news or online arguments.
Yeah.
It goes deeper. It suggests a fundamental rewiring of how we think and connect, driven by platforms focused on their bottom line, not, you know, the health of society.
Exactly. We need to understand the underlying structure, the architecture of it all, to even start thinking about solutions.
So where do we start? With the thinker whose style inspired this, Chris Hayes.
Right. So most people probably know him from MSNBC, host of All In, a prominent political commentator, journalist.
But what makes this analysis, or this style of analysis, so insightful is maybe his background before TV. He studied philosophy at Brown.
Yeah, and you can really see that. That philosophical training means he tends to look beyond the daily headlines. You know, he digs into the systems, the incentives, the structures behind the political drama. He's looking at the operating system, not just the apt crashing.
And this isn't new ground for him, is it? I mean, his earlier book, Twilight of the Elites.
Exactly. That book was all about how major institutions failed and how that eroded public trust. So he's been tracing this kind of decay, this breakdown of shared foundations, for a while now.
It's fascinating, too, because he occupies this kind of insider-outsider space. He's in mainstream media, but he's also one of its most pointed critics, calling out the very dynamics he works within.
Mm-hmm. It's a real paradox he seems to live with. How do you communicate complex, nuanced stuff when the environment itself rewards, well, the opposite, simple, loud, emotional takes? That tension really fuels the urgency here.
Okay, so let's get into the core argument of the Siren's Call, that central metaphor.
Right, Odysseus and the Sirens. The book basically argues that the digital song, the notifications, the endless scroll, the pings, it's just as captivating as the siren song was. But unlike Odysseus, we haven't really figured out how to protect ourselves. We haven't lashed ourselves to the mast, mm-hmm. collectively speaking.
And the analysis charts this shift, doesn't it, from, say, the era of Walter Cronkite, where most people got the same news, the same basic facts.
Yeah, from those trusted gatekeepers to, well, to now. This chaotic, fragmented landscape driven by algorithms we barely understand.
And this brings us to the absolute core conflict, as presented here, the business model itself. Harvesting and selling our attention, is that fundamentally incompatible with a healthy democracy?
That's the provocative claim. The platforms need engagement. Likes, shares, time spent scrolling, that's the goal. And the design choices, the argument goes, all flow from that need to maximize engagement.
So wait. The idea is that profit requires them to harm democracy. How does that work?
It's about what grabs attention most effectively. The analysis points out that threat, novelty, outrage, conflict, these things are psychological magnets for us. They generate clicks and shares. So the platforms, by optimizing for engagement, inevitably amplify that kind of content.
Hmm. So making feeds calm, factual, nuanced, that would actually hurt their business model.
According to this analysis, yes, because we'd likely spend less time there. So the platform's financial goals end up being kind of the inverse of what you'd want for an informed, deliberative public sphere.
Yeah.
It's chilling when you put it like that.
And the big consequence, this erosion of what the book calls the epistemic commons.
Right. That shared foundation of facts. If we can't even agree on basic reality, how can we possibly debate solutions or find common ground? It fractures the very basis of public discourse.
Okay, let's pull back the curtain then. How does this system actually work? Let's talk about the attention economy.
Yeah, the analysis defines it really starkly. We, the users, we're not the customers. Advertisers are the customers. We are the product. Our attention, our clicks, our emotional responses, that's the raw material being mined and sold.
And the key metric driving it all is engagement-based optimization.
Exactly. Things like likes, shares, how long you stay on the site or app. Mm. That became the currency. The algorithms were built to just, well, maximize those numbers. It didn't matter if the content was true or helpful or harmful even. Just, did it keep you engaged? Did you click? Did you scroll?
Which leads us directly to the algorithms themselves, the recommendation engines on YouTube, Facebook, TikTok.
Mm-hmm. The analysis tries to demystify these. Think of them like prediction machines. They use machine learning to figure out incredibly effectively what's most likely to keep you specifically hooked for the longest possible time.
And here's the crucial bit. The bias isn't necessarily ideological, right? It's not deliberately left or right wing.
No, exactly. The bias is inherent and sort of agnostic. It's a bias towards whatever grabs human attention most reliably. And it just turns out that extreme, emotional, divisive, novel stuff does that job really, really well.
So in optimizing for engagement, the algorithm, by its very nature, ends up amplifying polarization and outrage. It's like a mathematical side effect of trying to keep us clicking.
Precisely. Disagreement and conflict are just more engaging, algorithmically speaking, than consensus or nuance.
Wow. Okay, so that's the tech side. But why are we so susceptible? Let's get into the psychology, the hijacking of our brains. Why is that siren song so hard to resist?
Yeah, the book dives deep here. It's like a perfect storm hitting our cognitive vulnerabilities. First off, there's the dopamine feedback loop.
Ah, the slot machine effect.
Exactly. Scrolling feels like pulling a lever on a slot machine. You get variable rewards. Sometimes it's funny, sometimes it's infuriating, sometimes it's validating. That unpredictable reward pattern is known to be incredibly addictive.
Yeah, I think we all feel that sometimes, the compulsion to just refresh one more time.
Yeah.
And then you add our existing biases on top of that.
Right. Confirmation bias. We like stuff that agrees with us. But even stronger, perhaps, is the negativity bias. Our brains evolved to pay extra attention to threats and bad news. It was a survival mechanism.
Okay, so the platforms essentially figured out how to hotwire those ancient circuits. They mainline content directly into our emotional, pre-rational tribal brains.
That's the argument. Content tailored to trigger fear, anger, belonging, outrage. Because that's what gets shared, what gets reactions. We're being targeted right where our psychological defenses are weakest.
And the collective result, the societal fallout.
You scale that up to billions of people, and you get the destruction of that shared reality we talked about. You get filter bubbles, echo chambers, people sealed off in their own information worlds, unable to even understand each other's basic premises.
And the analysis argues this makes solving big problems almost impossible. It mentions phenomena like QAnon as a sort of extreme example.
Yeah, like a terrifying proof of concept. It shows how algorithmic amplification and psychological vulnerability can combine to create these really powerful, completely detached from reality mass delusions that then spill into the real world, into politics.
But it's not just political delusion,
yep.
Right? Didn't the analysis also touch on something like GameStop?
That's a great point. Yes, it uses GameStop as maybe a contrasting example, but showing the same dynamics. You had algorithmic tribalism, meme culture, this sort of chaotic internet energy, but aimed at Wall Street. It shows the system just generates this kind of disruption and chaos, whether the target is political consensus or financial institutions.
Okay, let's try to synthesize this. What are the really core themes or messages we should take away? The first one feels huge. Technology is not neutral. Its architecture is politics.
Absolutely central. It pushes back hard against this idea of platforms as just neutral pipes or town squares. Every design choice, the like button, infinite scroll, autoplay, it's presented as an ethical choice, a political choice that shapes our behavior primarily for profit, not for, say, healthy public debate.
And theme two follows directly. The erosion of shared reality, the epistemic crisis.
Right. The most dangerous outcome isn't just that we disagree on policies. It's that we're starting to disagree on basic verifiable facts. And when that common ground dissolves, how does the society function? How do you tackle climate change or a pandemic if you can't even agree it's happening?
Theme three is pretty blunt about the economics. Outrage is a business model.
Yeah, identifying outrage, anger, fear, resentment as the most reliable and therefore profitable emotion to farm. It suggests the system actively turns public discourse into this constant outrage machine because that's what gets the clicks, the shares, the engagement.
And finally, theme four offers a path forward, sort of. the dual imperative.
Mm-hmm. That tackling this isn't just about individual willpower, you know, lashing yourself to the mast. It also requires collective action, systemic reform, trying to mute the sirens by changing the rules, the regulations, the incentives governing the platforms. Both are needed.
The analysis uses some really sticky phrases and analogies. Let's talk about a few notable quotes or ideas.
Yeah, they really help frame the problem. They're quite memorable.
Okay, how about this one? We are living through a mass disabling of our collective cognitive immune system. What's the takeaway there?
It's powerful. It means the constant flood of manipulative content isn't just misleading us on specific issues. It's actually weakening our general ability to think critically, to evaluate information. It makes society as a whole more vulnerable to harmful ideas, like a body with a weakened immune system. It's about our collective intellectual resilience fraying.
Okay. And this one really emphasizes the active role of the platforms. The algorithm is the conductor of a symphony of outrage.
Right. It highlights that the system isn't passive. It's actively shaping what we see and hear by selecting and amplifying the most emotionally charged, divisive stuff. It's like it's deliberately turning up the volume on the noise and drowning out quieter, more nuanced voices. It conducts the chaos.
And this last one feels very personal, relatable. We were promised a digital town square. We were given a billion separate slot machines.
Oh, yeah. That captures the bait and switch perfectly, doesn't it? The promise of connection versus the reality of something designed to be addictive, isolating, and targeted at our individual weaknesses, not our collective strength. Like personalized little addiction machines.
So given all this,
yeah,
what can we actually do? How do we apply these insights in our daily lives, navigating this digital sea?
Well, the analysis suggests starting personally. With mindful media consumption, it really stresses pausing before you react, before you share. Asking yourself, is this designed to make me mad, scared? Is it trying to inform me or just grab my attention?
That pause is crucial. And related to that, the idea of a digital Sabbath.
Yeah, or just consciously scheduling time offline, yeah. Letting your brain reset, breaking that cycle of constant stimulation. Apparently, it genuinely helps with focus anxiety. It's presented almost as an act of mental self-defense in this environment.
But it can't just be individual effort, right? The analysis points to civic action, too.
Absolutely. This is a systemic problem, so it needs systemic solutions. That means being an informed citizen, supporting policy discussions around things like data privacy, algorithmic transparency.
What does algorithmic transparency actually mean in this context?
It means demanding more insight into why we're being shown what we're shown, having ways to audit these powerful recommendation systems instead of just accepting that a secret proprietary black box gets to shape public discourse for profit. And also, you know, looking at things like antitrust action against platform monopolies.
And maybe the most human solution.
Rebuilding community. The analysis strongly suggests that the best antidote to digital isolation and fragmentation is investing real time and attention in tangible, local, face-to-face connections. It's framed not just as a nice thing to do, but as a vital act of democratic resilience, pushing back against the digital tide by strengthening real-world bonds.
You know, reflecting on all this, what really struck me, what surprised me, I guess, was the framing that the chaos and confusion we feel, It's not an accident. It's not a bug in the system. It's actually a feature of the attention economy. It's kind of working as designed, unfortunately, by tapping into our deepest psychology for profit.
Yeah, that's sobering. And for me, the lasting insight is probably about freedom. True freedom today isn't just freedom of speech. It's also needing freedom from this kind of technologically supercharged manipulation, understanding the trap, understanding how the siren's call works.
Right.
That feels like the absolutely essential first step if we want to build something better, something more humane.
It's a really critical perspective for navigating the world we live in right now.
Yeah.
Definitely gives you a lot to think about.
It really does.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.